Hello, I'm Peter Deegan, and welcome to this RSSL podcast on my auditing journey. And today, I'm delighted to welcome Graham Saunders as a former peer and colleague of mine in Big Pharma over many years. And we're now at that stage in our career where we really enjoy paying forward our experiences to the next generation. And today, I'm just going to interview Graham on your auditing background, how you started. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are starting their auditing career, and listening and learning from others who've gone before them is usually a good way of developing understanding and competence. So, hello, Graham.
Hi, Peter.
So, when was your first audit and what was the experience you had on it?
First internal audit of our factory is different to my first external supplier audit. So I started back in the 1980s. I worked for a company called Wellcome Foundation Limited. Subsequently, it's incorporated in GSK. So in 1983, I started as a QC analyst, and we were obviously inspected by the regulators. And I quite liked the look of the job that these medicines inspectors had. You know, they were super auditors. We'd got an auditor on site, but he was nothing like them, and watched them doing what they were doing, and I decided I want to get into auditing. So after 6 years in the labs, an opportunity arose for the site auditor to have a junior, and that was me. So I managed to get into that. I applied for the job and as a QA auditor, and that was when I started to learn. So my first audits were actually on site. So it was a secondary manufacturing company. So we made liquids, creams, ointments, powders, steriles, and we did a lot of packaging, etc. So it was all formulations. So, oh, and obviously it was a massive warehouse. It was like the GSK's sort of main UK distribution warehouse. So what happened was we set up audit programs, and me and the existing auditor, we took it in turns after my training to actually audit the various parts of the facility. So I got a lot of experience there. The very first audit I did in-house was of the packaging department. What can go wrong there? You know, they just sent me into the packaging hall, and we had 14 high-speed packaging lines in the main packaging hall, and it was a case of this is how I was going to learn. So I was with the main auditor, and I'd been playing second fiddle to him on a number. This was my first opportunity, so almost thrown in the deep end.
And how did it go?
It went really well. I have to say, it was down to me being able to learn from an extremely experienced guy. I said at the beginning, he was nothing like the MHRA inspectors. Well, he wasn't. Bill was his name, and he'd been in the industry for 30-odd years. He'd done lots of production management jobs. You know, he'd been in charge of liquids, tablets, packaging. He'd worked all the way around, started in quality, and ended up again in quality as an auditor. And I learned so much from that guy, not so much how to audit and the day-to-day jobs, but everything about the interpersonal skills you need as an auditor, how you interact with the auditees. And it's one thing when you get into an external company, you're talking with strangers, really. If you're auditing your workplace colleagues, and we had some very strong characters in production, and he'd been their peer at one time as a production manager, it was me being introduced into how to audit those, what could be quite difficult individuals in their departments, and working through. But the audit went really well in the end of the day. Did good planning, did a great audit, a lot to see, and packaging halls. There's tons that can go wrong there. Okay, so there's daily mishaps. So there was no shortage of deficiencies for a junior auditor to cut his teeth on and be able to report. So it was a really pleasurable experience for me, that was.
So what are the nuggets of learning on difficult people? You work and have lunch and sometimes go out for a social evening with your peers, and you've got to turn back the mirror on them.
Yep. And that was one of the things. These guys who were in charge of these departments, you know, the packaging area, the tablets, manufacturing, etc., very experienced individuals, been in the job for a number of years. What they didn't know about their areas, the activities, and managing difficult staff themselves, it wasn't worthy of note. So when they had a new fresh-faced auditor coming to see them, they knew exactly how they could play it. Mr. Nice Guy or Mr. Tough Guy sort of thing. And I had to essentially gain their respect. And I had to show them that, yes, I'm new, but I'm eager. I'm keen to learn. I want to do a good job because at the end of the day, I'm doing this self-inspection, you know, internal audit, because there's a regulatory requirement for us to do this, because I'm the eyes and ears of the licensing authority in-house doing my audits. So that's what I was wanting to do. So it was really trying to promote how, not inexperienced I was, but how keen I was to ensure that we as a company did well, complied with everything. And that was my way of getting around these difficult individuals, was trying to gain their respect and show that there's some common ground that I'm doing this to help them.
So it's influencing on a mutual goal, really.
Yes, I'm the auditor, but essentially this was collaboration for improvement.
So you've had some good experiences. You started on the internal audits. You're also a qualified person, and you started on the qualified person training as well. So did you find auditing beneficial to learning your pharmaceutical QP trade as well?
Well, when I was the auditor, or, you know, playing second fiddle to the main site auditor, one of my responsibilities, as well as doing internal site inspections and external supplier audits, was to host regulatory inspections. So the MHRA came in, and there they were, these super auditors, as I thought. And it was at the time, it was sort of the, you know, the late 80s now, where they had to be QPs themselves to be a medicines inspector in the MCA, as was MHRA as became. And that was when I decided I too wanted to be a qualified person, because I'd set my sights on being a super auditor with the agency. That was where I wanted to go. So I'm getting my audit training. I now need to get the QP training. And it was only when I actually started the QP training did I fully understand how vitally important it was to be able to go into a facility, to understand how the facility is operating, and to identify any areas of non-compliance or deficiencies as part of their operations.
And of course, you don't need to be a QP to be an auditor, and all auditors are not on the journey to be a QP, but I think you make this a very relevant point. Auditing helps you understand the quality management system like no other mechanism, because you've got to open up the lid and you've got to understand it, but you've also got to know the requirements first. You shouldn't be afraid to interview people because you might be embarrassed by lack of knowledge. You're trying to extract their wisdom and knowledge and see how, given their experience and knowledge and competence, they're leveraging the benefits to a quality system. And that's part of the audit interview process as well.
Yeah. I was once told by a manager about regulatory inspections or audits, it's our opportunity to demonstrate how good we are. And I used to say that to my auditees, go into the packing hall manager, this is your opportunity the next day or so to show me how good your operation is, how well your staff can manage, etc. And when we got off, we started like that. It almost set the scene for a good, productive audit.
I like the ISO definition of auditing. ISO auditors go in looking for conformance. And the model that I give on the auditing course is, if you imagine a house built on stilts, okay, the stilts are the quality system and they need to be robust to keep the whole quality system. As you're auditing, you're going, stilt number one is engineeringly safe. Number two, engineeringly safe, that's conforming. Stilt number three has got a crack in it, so I need to fix that to ensure that it continues to be in conformance. And that's auditing.
Exactly, yeah.
We sometimes go in looking for the deficiency, but interviewing the person, not the SOP, you get a lot more insight and understanding. But I like what you say about having the professional respect to go in to audit somebody that's got years and years more experience than you are. And the advice I always give to our delegates on our IRCA training courses, indeed any other of our practical auditing skills courses, go in knowledgeable. Go in with a professional understanding, and the auditee will respond to that.
Yeah, it's key to be prepared, but whatever you're doing, whether it's an API through to a complex dosage form. Be prepared on the technical aspects of what you're going into audit, the facility you're going to be auditing against, the requirements, so any legislative requirements you may be auditing against. And if you've got all those in your back pocket and you've got that in the back of your mind, you're halfway there. The rest of it is what you've just said. It's having good interpersonal skills where you can interview somebody and you can get the information out of them, you know, that we need, and try to tell them that there's a benefit in us finding something as opposed to an external agency finding something.
I love the journey that people go through on our IRCA courses. We give them a tough audit on day one, and they're all over the place, and we play characters of avoidant auditees, avoiding the questions, closing down, and they realise, I got nowhere there. I just hit a barrier. And then a day two and three audits get more and more complicated, but we've given them feedback. Ask it in this way, because the auditee has to respond with a sentence rather than yes, no, maybe.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes there are factors outside our control that can impact upon the audit. So if you're doing it in a foreign country and all of the main operators, production guys or whatever, only speak the local language, and maybe you're doing it through an interpreter, that could slow things down. You need to make sure you get the right things across. Understand that what you're hearing back might not be exactly what the auditee has said. So you've got that. My first ever external audit on a supplier, it was for a glass manufacturer. I'll never forget it. I went in there and the first thing they did was give me a pair of ear defenders because it was so noisy. And for the next, whatever, 3 hours, it was sign language almost to asking the questions. It wasn't what I was expecting, being able to understand the process and ask about this, that and the other. It was pointing and writing on my clipboard to people. And that was just one of those external factors that just made it a little bit more difficult.
Also as well, being British English as we are, and Graham and I used to work for an Anglo-Swedish company, and our Swedish colleagues always said, no wonder you English are poets, you've got two words for every word that we've got. And, you know, it's that rich tapestry of language and the idioms, etc. And it's difficult, and it's very interesting how I've learned in my career to converse in a much more plain English. An example I always give, I happened to be in an airport in the Middle East, and it was very busy, and there was an empty seat, the only empty seat around, and I said to this gentleman, there's nobody sat there, is there? And he went, no, yes, no, no. And so I took that as a, no, you cannot sit here, but he was trying to understand what I'd actually said. All I needed to say was, can I sit there? And I think that's really important, to think about that language and culture. Even with great respect to my nation, I'm from the middle of England in Yorkshire, and I've had to round my vowels off. It takes you half an hour to tune into dialect and things like that. Yep. You've got to be prepared for that. So using plain language, using plain instructions, can I see this? Can I do that? Can you show me that? Is fundamental, really. Say what you want straight rather than meander into it.
And particularly, like you say, when it's a foreign language you're having to deal with, you know, just minimise the number of words you need.
So you've done your internal audits. You've got a bit of street cred. You're getting some good feedback. So then your manager says, Graham, you're doing pretty well. Go do a supplier audit. So what was your first supplier audit like?
Well, that was the one. That was the bottle manufacturer where, for 6 hours, we didn't really hear or speak. But the thing was, it was all, they were allowing us to walk around the furnaces when the glass was being sort of, you know, coming out molten. We could see what was happening. I'd been put in there because it was a well-performing supplier, good performance. We got no issues with them. It was a routine GMP every 3 years, low risk. So I'd been out to see them. We took massive volumes from them, though, because we made a lot of cough mixtures and Calpol suspension, etc. So most of our bottles came from this one supplier. So it was big business. But for me, it was just enjoyable because, yes, I'd been dealing with those difficult characters in-house, production managers, packaging managers, etc. I'm now going to an external company. And I was really surprised. They were quite accommodating. They were welcoming what was going on. and they want it to actually, you know, do a good job, be seen to be doing a good job, because as I sort of realized afterwards, their business depends on the sales coming from you know, our company and on other pharma companies, etc. So they want to do the best they can.
So that was a good, interesting and fun audit. First audit didn't seem to go too badly. Give me an example of when it really did go badly and you were having to use all your resources in an audit. You were, things were going wrong. You know, what was the core reason behind it? What did you do? Where did you get the strength to carry on?
Yeah, so I'd spent the start of my auditing career doing formulations, you know, so secondary manufacturing. I then moved into a position which was all about API manufacturing. So it was a quality support for the API area. And one of the intermediates we were purchasing, in fact, it was raw material we were purchasing. So I went out there with one of the my company's business development folks, you know, one of the purchasing guys, the buyers. So we went out to this facility, and as we were driving to it, you could just tell we were going through miles and miles of countryside. Then we came across this heavily industrialized area. There was smog hanging over, there was smoke coming out every chimneys, et cetera, et cetera. I'm thinking, okay, we've got a factory here somewhere. And sure enough, it was one of the many factories. So I went to this factory. It was a registered starting material that was going into one of our chemical syntheses to make our inters, to make our products. Wow, well, that was an eye-opener for me. So I went into the factory gates, all looked okay, security, ushered through by the quality manager, wearing, you know, a jacket and tie and a shirt. Shirt had seen better days. It was filthy, got big oil thumbprints on his collar where he'd obviously been doing it up. He went into the conference room, which to all intents and purposes was the, you know, it was multifunctional. It was the canteen for the workers. It was the conference room. It was everything. It was in the days of overhead projectors, so there was very little electronics, etc. And we were introduced to the staff. I was introduced to the process. I was introduced to the people we'd be seeing. And then we went around the facility. It was just something that was completely unexpected to me. I'd seen API manufacturing in my sort of parent company. I'd seen API manufacturing in other European facilities. I'd not seen the dirty end of manufacturing, so chemical manufacturing. This really was heavy chemicals. I was looking around, so safety, health and environment were sort of like non-existent. The operators just didn't have protective clothing. Watching what was happening with the product being manufactured, so part of the production process was that the material was dripped onto a drum dryer. So we had a very big rotating drum that was heated, products being dripped on it from above. It was then solidifying off it and it was rolling off the edges of it. This drum looked like it had just been dragged up, dredged from the bottom of the ocean. It was so rusty. For me, it was having my eyes opened to the sliding scale of GMP. This was really the early stages of GMP. They were barely operating to GMP. So for me, I was having to give them, as a supplier we'd actually received from them for a number of years, we didn't have an audit report from them. We'd had a third party report. So this was my company first view of this facility. It was a real eye-opener and we had to work really hard with them. And the difficulty was, you said, you know, what was your hardest experience? It was trying to bring them up to the standards we expected, when just looking at the way they operated, how they equipped the workforce, etc. It was a very run-down factory, didn't have a lot of money coming in. And for them, for me to trying to up their standards, it was a real difficult ask.
And how did you assess patient safety of such a primitive manufacturing process at a very, very early stage? Is that okay?
Well, I had to keep thinking, okay, we're taking this essentially raw material, so registered starting material from them. We're then going to be putting it through a number of synthetic processes to make our finished API active substance at the end. I was looking, I'd taken my information out with me, so my chemical synthesis schematic of the manufacturing process we'd use, and I was trying to see how would we be cleaning up any undesirables that might be provided to us, you know, and trying to figure that in.
So the learning point from me in that is that one is an auditor and one is looking at the physical process and procedures, but you also have to take into account the science and the scientific element behind it to do that risk evaluation of the burden further upstream. I always remember we were doing an API audit on site. I just remember the production supervisor saying, "Don't worry, there's 2,500 liters of toluene in there. There's no bug in the world going to survive that." And he wasn't wrong, but there's no excuse for bad practice. 2,000 liters of toluene should not be the key agent for masking a dirty process. And you've got to be mindful of that, but you can make a scientific, rational evaluation. And this is where it comes to me as auditor competence. And I think there's a strong parallel in the qualified person role in that we're trained to be professionally knowledgeable of an area, not necessarily an expert, but we know who the experts are to talk to. So as an auditor, you've got to have that resource behind you to go back to bring you on the audit, to have that scientific and technical person, and then you make that professional judgment as the auditor.
Yeah, for me, as a trained chemist, you know, that was my background, it was easier to try and follow the schematic of what would be happening, how would this raw material be used in the process, and how would it be cleaned, reacted, you know, how many steps away from the finished pure API was it? However, had I been, let's say, a microbiologist who'd not had a number of years chemical synthesis or a chemistry degree, it might have been a different ask. As the same it would be for me if I'd gone into a biologics production facility and trying to understand what's the potential bioburden being carried through the processes here.
So if you are able to write a letter back to that junior auditee today in a backwards time machine,
yeah,
what pieces of advice would you give yourself of years ago now?
And don't be afraid of making mistakes. Because I thought I had to be perfect, and I thought I was, you know, the, like you just said, the subject matter expert in all things pharmaceutical. And you just can't be, depending on where you're going, whether it's a glass manufacturer, an API, or something else, you know, a plastic that's going into a device. So be prepared to make mistakes. Do your background research. Okay, you can get yourself up to a sufficiently competent level that you will not come unstuck. You will not make yourself look unprofessional as part of the audit. But I guess the key thing, though, is use the experts. And when I say use the experts, so the auditees, they are the experts in the process or the product that you are auditing against. Use their knowledge. So ask the right questions. And that's how you can then get the information out of them.
There's the five Kipling's good friends and true, who and why and where and what and who. And the sixth auditing one is show me. I think that's really important. But be interested in their job. They do that for a living every day. And they're willing to give you an answer if you ask the question in the right way or ask the right question itself. And we can caricature this with observations that we've seen in poor auditing competence, where I'm coming in to find fault. I know more than you. You're below me. I'll be the judge of whether you pass or not. And that comes through in body language, as well as the spoken word, as well as the written word. What does good look like in communicating as an auditor?
I think I said at the beginning, I was told once that an inspection or an audit is an opportunity to show how good you are. So I always introduce the audits when I'm opening the meeting. I actually say to the people present, this is your opportunity to show me, to demonstrate just how good you are, the activities you perform and the way you control them, etc. So I'm guessing then for part of that is as I'm then going through the audit itself, I'm looking for all those things where they want to demonstrate how good they can do things. So I'm looking at their documentation. How well are they completing it? How well are they applying, let's say, data integrity principles to it? Part of their manufacturing, how do they treat their staff manufacturing the items? be they raw materials or components, etc. Are the staff, do the staff understand what they're supposed to be doing and why they're doing it? So what does good look like? It's a case of me asking an individual, why do you control this process to these parameters? And if they can turn around and say, it's because we don't want to increase an impurity level for an API, or we want to ensure that, you know, the glass that we're manufacturing doesn't have inclusions in it, potential internal defects, stuff like that. So you're gaining this appreciation all of the time. And experience will tell you what good looks like eventually.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think it's been very interesting as I came in as an IRCA tutor on the IRCA Lead Auditor course, that IRCA and the ISO guidelines on auditing are very clear. You do not offer free consultancy and you don't give them instruction or advice on how to respond. I really do struggle with that sometimes. I can understand that purist reason in that it doesn't come back to bite you. The individuals responsible for their environment should be the experts, etc., and take ownership.
Yeah.
So you can't offer advice on, you know, you need, you know, this is a non-conformance in this and I want you to do this, this and this. I can understand that. But it doesn't prevent you for, as you said, pointing out you're very good at that.
Yep.
Best example I had in recent years was I audited a laboratory in the UK. And I've got a particular bee in my bonnet about training. Okay. I like to see a proper training matrix and I like to see every person's, if it's a manual system, you know, folders of training folders to look identical, to have the job description first, the qualification second, and the linear training record. Because it helps me as an auditor just be very consistent. And this laboratory, they just did exactly what I would have done. And I'm not saying that I know best, but it was brilliant. It was logical. It was structured. And in the evidence gathering component of the audit, it fitted perfectly. And there was chronology and there was evidence. And it was excellent. They were able to demonstrate their competence and their passion for the job. So it all just knitted beautifully. And in the closing meeting, I just felt the right time and place to say it. I said, can I say that's one of the best training records I've ever seen, systems I've ever seen? And this young lady, she just started to rise and become about 6 centimetres taller in her chair and a beaming smile. And the lead host, she says, do you know, Sally has just spent her life in the last 2 years trying to get this right, so that's wonderful. It's praising somebody for doing a great job and making them feel good about themselves, I think, is wholly legitimate and not done enough, maybe. It's a fine balance between being that sort of friendship role rather than professional feedback, I think, is really important. Because also, as well, if they're good at something and they're weak in another area, how can that good way of working be used to help them remediate potential weaknesses in that area? And it's that joined up thinking as well.
No, I'd completely agree with that. And like you said, we're not meant to be unpaid consultants helping them. However, if I've seen things which I may give as a recommendation, It's not necessarily a GMP non-compliance. However, I will write up, they may wish to consider adopting a different approach. Other parts of the industry do it, you know, this way. Yeah. Just to give them something to consider and for them to actually decide what they're going to do going forward.
So my final question actually is not about an auditor. It's about an auditee. From what you've seen in the great, the good and the different, what advice would you give to auditees who host an audit, having been the auditor and been the auditee? What does good look like from an auditee?
One thing I always said when I've been preparing departments, areas, etc., or sites for inspections, for audits, I remind the staff that this is our opportunity to demonstrate how good we are. But I also remind them that don't get hung up on the 1 or 2% of items that we still got to improve upon. We've got 98% of items that are really good. It's human nature to get focused on the, oh gosh, I hope the auditor doesn't find this little thing that's wrong. So I would tell any auditee, don't sweat the small stuff. You know, don't get hung up on those minority of items that the auditor might never come across. Focus on the majority of all the good stuff that you've got. Obviously, if the 1% is a hugely critical issue that could impact upon patient safety, then yeah, that's of concern, but it rarely is.
Yeah.
So for me, it would be, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. Focus on essentially showing how good and capable you and your company is.
I like the ISO definition of objective evidence is the truth, verity or existence of something. So be prepared to show the truth, because the auditor will know what the truth is anyway. You're just verifying from that. I think that's really important. I think my other best experience I ever had, or best learning opportunity I ever had, was we just built a brand new parenteral facility and we were just about to have our first regulatory inspection. And I'd been part of the works build team as the quality works quality representative. It was an amazing experience building your own parenteral factory from design to build to qualification. You know, what better experience can you get? But there was one of the plant managers, for whatever reason, we never hit it off. We always sort of had a bit of conflict together, and it was difficult to work with each other. You work professionally, etc., but you can't get on with everybody. So we were just about to do some mock pre-inspections, internal audits, and I was in front of the new production team as a QA officer saying, look, it's really important. I need your support. When I do this, I'll be coming in as an FDA inspector because I want to train you how to host and receive an inspection and allay your fears as well. And the person who I'd had conflict with for all these years just turned around and he says, can I interrupt you, Peter? And I was just waiting for the big negative. He says, when that inspector comes in, it's going to be me and Peter representing our company and our patients together. So we've got to do this. And I still get very emotional about that, because that is the essence of what it's about, in my opinion, about being an auditee. There may well be an auditor that where we're supplying product to, but our ultimate audit client is that patient, and we all need to be mindful of that. And it was a great pride in my career to be interrupted and have my colleague say what he did, because I'd paid that forward, I'd passed that passion on, and maybe there'd been some sticking of my passion for the patient. I think that's really important. Graham, it's been a fascinating journey today. Thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
And hopefully people listening in who are starting their auditing career or are still very experienced in their auditing career have gained some nuggets of wisdom from our Graham here. Thank you very much for your time and your candor, and hope this was useful. If you want to know more, by all means, log on to our website, look at our audit career path. We've got lots of podcasts and webinars coming along where we're trying to share that journey and passion in auditing. And we'll see you on the next podcast.
Thank you.